Broadcasting live from more than 600 affiliates in North America, and that's including Puerto Rico, Guam, Canada. It's Coast to Coast AM, and I am coming from the affiliate 840 WHAS out of Louisville, Kentucky. And that's the Supreme Silver Bells, one of the few last Christmas songs you're going to hear throughout the night because it's coming to a close. But it's kind of a creepy Christmas here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we'll be doing a creepy Christmas in about less than an hour. But until then, we still have Al Ridenour to talk about with Krampus. And I want to remind you, not only are we going to be taking your calls here coming up, but also please head to our website. There's some really cool pictures of the images of Krampus that we have up there on our site, and a whole bunch of other great stories too. That's at coasttocoastam.com. Stay with us. Your phone calls next here on Coast to Coast. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Al Ridenour talking about Krampus. And we're going to start taking your calls. I was talking earlier, Al, I was talking earlier about, you know, looking forward to some sort of studio production or theatrical release. And I got a couple people that have sent in, you know, the old or the movie that was, I guess it came out maybe last year or so, a studio release called Just Krampus, right?
Yes.
Just,
uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about that. I mean, I know that one. I'm talking about a theatrical release like The Hobbit, you know, where the one that people sent me information. I appreciate that. Thank you. I do know it. I know that one. That was about a $15 million budget. I'm talking about, because of the costumes are so lavish, yep, we're talking, you know, a $93 million budget type film theatrical release. That's, yeah, what I'm talking about.
There's so much rich imagery there. I personally,
yes,
always wanted to see Guillermo del Toro do the Krampus film.
So, oh wow!
That would be my fantasy pick.
I'm with you. Holy cow! I had we got some people on the phone, so we're going to get to them in just a second here. And I've got a lot of people that have written in some questions, so I want to ask one of those because I find this interesting as well. Jack in California had asked, "Do you yourself make any connection between? Is it? Wait a minute. First of all, is it Krampus or Krampus? What's the better way to say it?
Well, the German would be Krampus, but this is an American thing now, so I just say Krampus.
So that's kind of, you said it kind of in between both Krampus and Krampus.
I give people permission to say it the American way, Krampus.
Oh, okay, Krampus. Okay, so do you make a connection between Krampus and the Purge movie?
Oh, I don't. I'm sure somebody might choose to do that. I haven't heard anybody do that yet, but it'd be interesting to see where that would go.
Yeah, that's a great movie, by the way. The Purge. It's like, what? Really? Who thought of this? What mind thought of this? That's an amazing movie. But so you have nothing with that. And he's talking about the public showing of the Krampus walking around, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I do remember in the movie, too, people had different masks and things on their face. But I tell you, it's a whole different thing for sure. So let's go ahead. Is there anything else you want to say before we start taking phone calls that I haven't touched on yet with the Krampus?
No, I'm curious to hear what people want to know.
Okay, all right. Let's see here. Andre, wildcard line number one. Let's talk to Andre out of L.A. Hey, how are you? And Merry Christmas, I guess, one of the last times you're going to hear that, Andre.
Merry Christmas. Hey, Al, it's Andre Boutillier.
Oh.
You know, I'm looking forward to reading the book, but I wanted to know if you've made any connections between the rite that the master musicians of Jarakuta do, because although they're nominally Islamic, they've been doing a ritual every year for about a week where they play music and feast, and it's a rite of Pan. And one of the villagers comes out of a cave dressed as Pan with masks and animal skins, with a switch, and actually any of the women that are virgins that he switches will become pregnant that year. It's a fertility rite that's,
yeah,
been going on since the days of Rome. And whether,
yeah,
or not there's any connection since
St.
Nicholas is Turkish, and there are connections between them and Rome. I didn't know whether or not Pan.
I think that it's hard to like pin that down, but that whole idea of, so what I should, the audience, people in general might be interested in the idea that Krampus is hitting people is, in the narrow context, it means they were bad, they're getting swatted, but there is a sort of a pagan backdrop to all this, where there's a very similar character to the Krampus called a Pest, which would hit people, and in this case they say the beating, like Andre is saying, it brings good luck or fertility or instills life. So yeah, there's a lot of traditions, and I mainly examine like German language culture in my book. But there's a lot of traditions where they have these. They call them life switches. They beat life into something like you would. We have this in our culture even with like birthday spankings or the idea, the way that a doctor, they don't do it, I guess it's the same way now, but this is smacking the baby's behind to get it breathing. So there's this idea that the beating can bring a good thing. What Andre's talking about, I'm not that familiar with, but I think just that idea of how these switches or spanking might be interpreted completely differently, that lies in the background of the Krampus folklore.
Andre, thank you very much for the phone call out of L.A. We're going to head over to the other side of the world, going to Birmingham, Alabama. We're going to let Annie come in here with a question on wild card line number two. Merry Christmas to you, Annie. What was your question?
Merry Christmas and happy Hanukkah to everybody.
That's right. Thank you.
The description you gave sounds so much like Belschnickel from Germany. More similarities than differences, because Belschnickel does come around and tap on the door or window. He wants the children to recite scripture or a song. He has bells on his clothing. He brings switches and a stick. He has bad children treats and good children. He has treats for good children and something else for bad children, switches or something. But Belschnickel doesn't have horns, and he's not portrayed like a devil, but he wears furs. And are these the same ones, or is this a different one?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And so, in a way, we've been talking about Krampus as this new thing that America's discovering, but we've had, the Belschnickel character has been around since it probably came over as early as the 1700s. And you're right, the function is basically the same. He doesn't have the horns, maybe, but initially, when we look back at the early Krampus traditions or the other ones I mentioned, the Paris traditions, you see the costumes really are variable. It's not locked down in that iconic look with the horns and the tongue. So a lot of times it'd be like the Belschnickel would be a guy in an old coat that's turned inside out, and he wears whatever he can find to cover his face, or he smears it with ash to make it non-recognizable. So, yeah, we basically have had a cousin. The Belschnickel comes from a different part of Germany. I think they say it's from Baden-Württemberg, but it's all of the same tradition, I would say.
Thank you, Annie. That was a good question. We always get great calls here on Coast. I'm telling you, I love it. I love it. I want to ask you something personally with you. How did you get involved in researching kind of the weirder aspects of history and culture of this?
I don't know. It's my nature. What can I say?
Put you on the spot. How did you get into this weird stuff? What's going on with you, dude? Right? Actually, one of our people that works at Coast, Greg Bishop, says he knows you. And I said, well, what should I ask him since you know him? What's more on a personal level? And he was like, hey, ask him how he got into this weird stuff. So I bet there's a story there that we all want to know.
Well,
maybe not here.
the Krampus stuff we did. I do Krampus. I guess you mentioned earlier in the intro, but excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. We do Krampus runs or Krampus runs in LA, and we do a whole series of events, and that kind of is an outgrowth of what I was doing in the '90s. I was organizing a group called the Cacophony Society, which would do public, basically kind of guerrilla theater, public appearances and costumes. Now, it was sort of in the early days, just before the flash mob thing happened, so we were doing sort of in the same vein. And then, so that interest of kind of doing surprising, unexpected things that kind of give people something to, like, entertain them, wake them up, make them think, make them that kind of public spontaneity seemed exciting to me, and then so it kind of funneled that into my interest in the Krampus. But yes,
I gotcha.
Greg, I know Greg. I went to Giant Rock, George Van Tassel's so-called time machine with him, and I've always just been, you know, living in L.A. We're like so I'm so immersed in weird culture. This is our, well, you know, all of our history, isn't it?
That's right. You just walk down the street, right? Yeah. And there you go, right? I know a lot of people there, so they'll call me and go, hey, you know, in a fun way, though.
Oh, I
yeah,
that was fondly, but didn't I assure you?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny. Whenever you you're going to interview somebody, you know, I always like to say have a conversation. But whenever you're going to talk to somebody, you always like, what's the first question I should ask to get into it? Because that's important. You know, what's the first thing to ask? And really, the actual first question I came up with you was, is this a story or a party? Because I think you enjoy the party of it.
You mean the Krampus stuff?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I get the question, because a lot of people think it's only a story. They think it's a, you know,
it's a
folk tale or something the parents warn their children. They don't realize that they're actually, people are doing this. You know, they're impersonating the figure. They're running around in these, you know, these costumes, and they're so they're it's both, really. The story precedes probably the people dressing up. But yeah, it's a little of both. A little column A, little column B, I'd say.
That's right. I like that. So let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line number 3, Nancy out of Victoria, Texas. And Nancy, how are you tonight? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Connie.
Hi.
What's kind of ironic is that I just watched Krampus tonight, and I think it's a really good movie, but, you know, you got to, like, do your homework enough about Krampus.
Well, that movie is a $15 million budget movie, so I've done some research on that, so I know exactly what you're talking about, if that's what you're addressing. It's just not the theatrical... Yeah, it's not the theatrical release that I was looking for, that we're talking about the 100, you know, to $150 million release. That's what I'm looking for with the way that people, you know, really show off these costumes. I think something like that, like a Lord of the Rings, like the Harry Potter films, that's what I'm looking for, not the $15 million, you know, Hollywood, you know, throw it out kind of thing. It looks like a very interesting movie. I haven't seen it. But I know exactly which one you're talking about. So, I know about that one.
Go as far as it could or be as exciting.
Exactly.
Is they only have, is it, there's a, they, we talked about this at the very beginning, I think, of my interview here. Is they treat the character as if it's just a singular character. Imagine if you had, you know, like what Connie's talking about, if you had dozens and dozens or hundreds, who knows, characters. But, they literally limited themselves on that.
Yeah, they did.
Also, I will just insert this, the way that the folklore behind it, or the way they interpret the character,
right,
is incredibly different from the authentic thing, which you expect of the movie, but it's pretty far out there, pretty far afield.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying I hope that they take it the whole nother route, like you and I are talking about. So Nancy, what's your actual question?
My question is there has been any actual sightings of Krampus, like within... in history, artifacts, or in the past 100 years, or any sightings of the actual Krampus, or any associations of Krampus?
Well, every year there are sightings in Austria and Bavaria, but they're people in costumes. I don't know. People have asked me that about whether, you know, treating it like it's a cryptid, and I have never heard anything like that. I wish there were. I think that'd be exciting.
Well, that's the difference between a myth and a story, you know, or I guess the reality. And thank you, Nancy, for that question. And, you know, that was a question actually I had earlier with you. It is a myth. It is a party and a story, and that's what it is. And it is put together to keep kids on the straight and narrow, as you said. But a lot of myths do come from, so it's not real. A lot of myths do come from something real somewhere along the way. And that was my question to you once before.
Well, I think we were talking about ghost stories earlier, and the Krampus folklore is related to ghost stories. So, depending on how you come down on that topic, you know, whether you believe in, you know, ghosts, whether we see encounter ghosts. But the Krampus, yeah, it's also because we're going further back in history, like to the, you know, the 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, and people saw things that they absolutely recorded as being real. And these were, they would see hosts of ghosts that would appear around Christmas, parties, hunting parties in the sky, war parties in the sky, and also returning ancestors. So, you know, I would leave that, certainly leave that more open. And what all these ghostly characters became in, with, historically, the church turned them more into devils. So we have these, I just briefly mentioned the perished character, which is basically the pagan version of the Krampus without the saint attached. So we have a long history of things people say they have seen. They don't, the Krampus himself is not really reported, like the thing that people have seen, like a cryptid or, you know, Bigfoot or whatever. But the ghosts, well, there's lots of reports of these, like, party, like, companies of ghosts wandering through villages, through forests, over mountains, and those are associated with the story.
Well, on the runs that you that happen all over the place, is that also drinking involved as well when they do this? Are they going from bar to bar, kind of thing, just dressed up? Yeah, okay.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they, you know, that's...
I'm sorry.
Historically, I think that was a more part of it. There, people are, you know, in general, there's a more cautious atmosphere. I talk to people that say that it's absolutely not allowed and you get thrown out of the troop if you do it, but other people say, yeah, it helps you get in character. So it's not a bar crawl. They will bring, you know, they might bring some schnapps along on the thing, or they might have something before they go, but they're not... They're not happy. The thing was, they wouldn't stop and have drinks at a bar. They will barge into one, but they'll be in character. So it's very important. It's like a code of honor that you would never take your mask off in front of the general public. And I don't really see drinking through one of those Krampus masks. But you know, earlier it probably was a little bit, you know, more more alcohol driven or more alcohol saturated than it is nowadays, I think.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too. Yeah. Just taking the costumes off, it would have been like, you know, no, this isn't any fun. And plus, some of them are so massive and so heavy and so, I mean, just...
Well, they're already dehydrated. Yes, they're dehydrated.
That's what I'm
sweating,
thinking.
So it's not a great combination.
Yeah, they need just water.
Yeah, they need water.
They got to be sweating like dogs under there. That's how I was looking at it. Great. Okay, well, I wanted to ask you one more thing before we go into the break real quickly. And I'm not sure if I'm going to say this right. Cacophony Society?
Yeah, the Cacophony Society?
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, well, that was the, I guess I didn't really name the group. That was the group that I was referencing earlier that was engaged in, like, a prank, sort of flash mob type stuff, street theater. We also would explore, and I think this is how I knew Greg, who works for the show, we'd explore offbeat sites, kind of places, you know, where people, places, strange museums, people, groups that worship aliens. So we were always like looking on the fringes of society. So it was a group that was kind of a mix of art and exploration.
Oh, okay. And you founded that group.
I ran the group in LA for about 10 years. It started in San Francisco a few years before that in the late 80s.
Well, that just seems to, that needs to keep going.
I think it's going under many different names nowadays.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. We got to keep stuff up like that. So if you're just tuning into us, we've been talking to Al Ridenour, and he's all about the Krampus, man. That is his deal. And you can check out his book called The Krampus and the Old Dark Christmas, Roots and Rebirth of the Folkloric Devil. Incredible myth and story. And as he said, it's a story and a party. We got more to come, and we're taking your phone calls, by the way. Those of you on there, hang on. We'll be back with you here. You're listening to Coast AM. And welcome back. Merry Christmas. You know, it's all winding down, and you've opened all your gifts. You might be sad or happy, but it's nice, you know, for what you got or didn't get. But it's always nice to finally get that chill moment where you can hear these really nice traditional tunes like this one. Frank Sinatra, that's who that is. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. But it's that time, at least with me, that you hear the music and you can finally go, ah, this is Christmas, and that gets you into the spirit. So if it's finally just happening with you now, like me, then you've had a busy time or you're working too. But Merry Christmas again, winding down, as I said. The Americas, what I guess we got maybe a little bit more time on the West Coast and then Hawaii as well and Alaska, right? So we're going to stay with you through Christmas till the end, man. We're coast to coast. That's what we do. I want to remind everybody to check out our new website. I mean, I guess it's been up for a little bit. It's still new to me. It's all different colors and different areas to check out, and it really, really looks good. And there's some really neat things in the news. Two of the things to check out is brand new tonight that we just put in there. A fisherman found a 16-foot snake in a frozen river. I guess he caught it. I don't know. I haven't totally looked at it because I don't want to look at that story. That's just the plain headline. I'm not going there on that one. Also, an unidentified object from the sky damages a van. That's interesting. And you can also see the different pictures that we're talking about Krampus, that's in the book that Al Ridner has written. And that's who we're talking to tonight. We're taking your questions. So more of those coming up for you next year on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. However, I'm in tonight. This is the regular day that he has off. It just happens to happen during Christmas. And so good for him and good for me. I'm very happy to be here. And I'm broadcasting live out of the 840 WHAS studios with Al Ridenour and talking about the Krampus tonight. It's kind of the evil side of Christmas, but not really. I mean, this is kind of more of a, like we're talking, it's more of a story and a party. So, Al, here's a question for you, and thank you, by the way, again, for being here. So many years, you've also talked about something else, and that's SantaCon. Tell me about SantaCon. What is that all about?
SantaCon was one of the activities that the Cacophony Society you just mentioned.
Oh, okay.
If people are also familiar with the Burning Man Festival out in Nevada, the Nevada desert every year, that's something else that the group did. SantaCon was basically an excuse to assemble, it's happening still, and it happened... It started in San Francisco with the Cacophony Society, and then when we did it in L.A. where I ran the group, and it was just an excuse to assemble as many as a couple hundred people in matching Santa suits and to just run through cities, again, surprising people, confusing people, bringing them like a little like huh to their life, It was something that went on through the 90s. It's actually still happening in Los Angeles, but people did it for different reasons. Some of the people thought, oh, this is some kind of protest against commercial Christmas, which I never looked at it like that particularly. I liked seeing the surreal sight of having 100 red Santas running down Venice Beach, and it seemed amusing to me. So people do it.
That is amusing.
It's spread. It's now it's in. I don't even know. I think it's in. People who do it in dozens of countries, and it just sort of grew a life of its own. It kind of grew beyond our group that started it, and because a lot of people wanted to, were involved in it. Now, friends of mine in L.A., they had abandoned it because it became more predictable, and the whole idea was to be surprising and surprise people, and also it became just more of a bar hop, and everybody was just really drunk and obnoxious. People would become really drunk and obnoxious, and it got a little bit of a bad reputation, and not particularly in L.A., but all over the country. It's people drink a lot on the holidays, and that's what happened with that. So a lot of my friends had liked, enjoyed doing that kind of street theater type stuff, surprising people, and then eventually we kind of recruited some of those people who were sick of the other thing into the Krampus runs, which is sort of in some ways the same idea. And in some ways that SantaCon is actually in the 1800s, that's kind of what Christmas was like. It was definitely very alcohol driven, and it was not the children's holiday it is today, and not the family holiday. It was like a young man's out holiday, so it's time for carousing and masks. Even in New York and Philadelphia and Boston, all had people would dress up like we do on Halloween and get crazy, also making noise, or, you know, bringing horns and bells into the streets. So the idea of people wearing costumes and assembling in the street and acting rowdy was, in a way, really an actual traditional Christmas that we just forgot about. But it's much older, and then it goes by European tradition too, which you kind of see a little of that with the Krampus running around on the bells and the kind of seasonal chaos that he causes.
Yeah, it seems, you know, going back to drinking now, it seems like most everything is that. It all kind of leads back to that. I'm not the biggest drinker in the world. It's fine, whatever anybody wants to do, but man, I can't imagine being in a Santa costume, burning up, and then sick, because that's me. I would always get sick, so I'm not the good drinker.
Yeah, that's fun.
Right. And when you talk about Venice Beach with Santa suits on, I'm picturing them with all the muscles, you know, the muscle-bound guys and the beach dudes. Well, let's head back to the phones and see what we've got. First-time caller, James, out of Springfield, Massachusetts. Hey there, James. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Merry Christmas, Connie. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Hi,
Merry Christmas.
I just quickly want to clarify that now I'm calling from, I'm in Hartford, Connecticut, and I'm calling from my home station, WTIC, the wonderful Clear Channel station.
Excellent.
But anyway, I've been listening to your show, and you mentioned that Krampus, as kind of a counterpoint or an anti-Santa, has become kind of the focus in recent times in America. And me personally, I've noticed on social media and things, there's been a lot of references by the, I guess you call them like the counterculture or the hipsters or whatnot, that they reference him and revere him and kind of give like a tribute to this character in a almost like a ridiculing of Western Christmas tradition. And I was just hoping you could maybe further elaborate on your ideas as to the appeal from these groups with regards to this character.
Well, you're absolutely right. That has largely fueled that sort of, countercultural kind of rebellious attitude has fueled some of the interest. But I think the other thing that's fueled interest is like people, just the phenomenon of cosplay, people going to, like, you read about how many people go to Comic-Con every year. So this idea that people also want to indulge their fantasy and dress up is something that's just been growing and growing over the last decades. But it's the Krampus is not a he's not an anti-Christmas character. He's not an anti. We were talking earlier. He comes from a very traditional world. He enforces the order of the church. He appears with Saint Nicholas, and America, the figure America embraces, doesn't really do much with the Saint Nicholas side of the equation. So yeah, he is a little misinterpreted. It's kind of, I mean, it's a little unfortunate, but I was saying also earlier, it's like we're kind of coming up with our own American version of the Krampus, and he is closer to what you're describing. But it's kind of sad that, you know, it has to be either or. I enjoy traditional Christmas Christmas traditions as well as the Krampus, and certainly, like you said, in Austria, it's enjoying the Krampus is enjoying your Catholic culture, your tradition that's going back to the 1800s or whatever. So it depends what you bring to it, what the character is. He's out there to interpret.
Yeah, James, thank you for that question. First-time caller. It's always nice when we get those in here at Coast to Coast. Let's head over west of the Rockies. Laura from New Mexico. How are you tonight, Laura? Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, good evening. And it's just about the end of wishing Merry Christmas. Good evening,
yes.
Alan. Good evening, Connie.
Thank you.
Every time I listen to Coast to Coast, I'm always educated. Every guest offers so much. It's amazing. I'm 55, and I must be naive as heck because I never heard of Krampus. Yeah, and so I Googled it before I called. And I wondered, historically, if in your research, how far back do you think? I mean, it almost seems like it kind of was European or before it became American. How far back do you think historically, how many hundreds of years do you think it went before it became an American, I want to say, you know, catch on here and for Americans to sort of act upon it and react. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
America's only really been exploring the traditions, since, I would say, since, you know, the early 2000s. But the tradition, it begins in Europe, and it goes back, depends what you call Krampus, because the thing that we recognize today is Krampus is, it goes back to the late 1800s, I would say, and then it becomes a little less recognizable, but there's sort of traditions that have a family resemblance, is people wearing costumes and masks going door to door at the holidays. And so you see that when you start comparing with those traditions. You can find those traditions going back to the 1700s, maybe late 1600s. I hope that answers the question a bit.
I think there's just, it is new to a lot of people here in the States, without a doubt. And again, when people do start looking, you know, they'll start seeing a little piece of Krampus in some little show or some little story or something brought up. It's like I said, you know, it's funny that maybe this is all I watch is things like Family Guy and American Dad and The Simpsons. I don't know, but I've always loved those kinds of things. And I know some people that are a part of the show, so I got to watch how they're doing. But, you know, to see them depicted in those shows, to see Krampus, and you'll see a little here and there. But, yeah, I guess even you said it's just now really starting to hit the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah, I think that release of that movie last year definitely. I started getting involved with this 2012-2013. People, I had to explain. Now I meet people who haven't really heard of it, but it's much more rare. So now, even though the movie kind of put out a little bit of a false image, at least people have a sort of a general idea what it is, or they know it's something scary, especially with Christmas. It looks like a monster with horns. So.
Yeah, and it is cool what they did with that movie. I mean, they did do a pretty neat character of it. I mean, the look of it, but as you said, it's not exactly, you know, pinpointed correctly. That's the way it goes. But I still hope to see one that's done where there's like a trilogy of all this kind of stuff, or a series of five, or, you know, just in a bigger budget. You know, that bigger budget can just do so much more to the stories and stuff. I love small budget films. I mean, my gosh, I'm into documentaries and films myself, and I understand, you know, you can do unbelievable amounts of work with less finances, but I'm still hoping somebody will say, let's throw all sorts of stuff into this one just to be able to see one of those type of really like fairy tale type films. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so
I would love to see that too.
Yeah. Well, is there something about the Krampus that we haven't hit that we've missed?
I think the idea that I'd say in one of your, somebody brought it up. I'm not trying to think where it came from, but some of the connection with things like A Christmas Carol, that whole aspect of Christmas is a time when ghosts would appear. That my book is subtitled The Old Dark Christmas, so it talks. I talk a lot about the season, and there was like all of these superstitions associated with the season. Not only Christmas was actually a time, believe it or not, Christmas was a time where associated with werewolves too. The whole month of December, you were not supposed in the Bavarian Alps, you were not supposed to even say the word wolf because it would draw werewolves. And it was also time for witchcraft gatherings. It was a time for fortune telling. There's still, in Germany, there are still fortune telling traditions that are associated with the Christmas period. And when I say Christmas, actually, you may have a little bit longer Christmas than you think if you look at it this way, because they would celebrate the 12 days of Christmas, which starts last night and goes all the way through January 6th, Epiphany. So that whole period particularly was considered like a haunted time. So a lot of my book explores the mythology of that and all these other sort of characters I've alluded to that were part of the folklore that were frightening. Could be good, could be bad. You had to appease them. There were a lot of rituals involving burning certain kinds of incense and leaving certain foods out. So the whole background that the Krampus comes from, when you start to look at all that, you understand it more. It's not as strange as it at first seems. You realize that, you know, it was part and parcel of that, just how the cultures dealt with that time of the year and the darkness, maybe issues of scarcity and want. And, I just would like people to know that the book is also about all of these other sort of Christmas traditions that beyond the Krampus that I think are, when you look at the book, you flip through, a lot of the images aren't actually Krampus images. They're images from other things in December, other folklore figures associated with that, with the whole month of December and into January.
And that's what, you know what, that's what's fun, though, about other cultures is you go and you experience what they have in tradition and how, and even if a certain part of the country has the same type of culture, every little region and area and little town, they do it in a different way. They have their own spin to it. And that's interesting. You know, I've moved around quite a bit. Being on radio and television, you do it to eat and survive. It's just the way it is. But, and I have not gone outside of the States to live. I haven't done that. I've visited outside of the States. But in living in the United States just alone, just traveling just a little bit that I've done, everybody's different in everything. So it's so cool to get all the different cultures just alone. And this is what this is. I mean, it's bigger elsewhere, but it is coming here. And Americanizing it is changing it in a different way. But if you're an American, you're doing it here, like you're in Philly, and you're going on the Krampus run, and then you go to a whole other country and do it, I mean, you're going to go, man, this is so cool. This is how we do it. That's how we do it. And it's how we communicate. It's how we have fun. It's how we have nice adventures. And we grow inside and outside of ourselves. But it is interesting, and you kind of noted that too along the way, I could tell, that people will look at this and go, this is how they're looking at it now, maybe because it's new, and hopefully we can differentiate this. But it's not anti-Santa. It's not anti-Jesus. It's not anything like that. It's just, hey, here's just another story, and it's about keeping kids in line. It's not real. It's just made up to keep kids in line.
and you would think the adults to have fun too.
And the adults to have fun. And it's more, getting that, I don't know what it is where people want to just go, it's either got to be really, really good or really, really bad, or it's got to be against this. No, it's just another thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we really need to differentiate, or it's important too, so people won't think you're out there being the anti-Santa man.
No, absolutely not.
Not you. You got SantaCon. Well, before we wrap it up, I want to say thank you very much for showing up. We've got another guest coming on, but we want to say thank you for your time and taking phone calls, and we really appreciate what you're doing. Your book is fantastic. How can we find you and get a hold of you?
People who want to contact me can do so through KrampusLosAngeles.com, and any email that goes through that website goes to me. And the book is available at any bookseller, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of that.
And what's next for you?
I don't know. I've just been in a whirlwind of Krampus, so I think
bet.
I cannot talk about anything with horns or a lolling tongue for a couple of months, and then I'll figure it out.
Well, thank you for wrapping up your time with us at the very end, so that now you can rest. Okay.
Thank you so much,
and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
You take care. That was Al Ridenour, everybody, here on Coast to Coast AM. Coming up, stick around. Sam Sharon. It's actually Sam Sharon. I'm going to kid him about it. Really nice guy. You're going to meet him next here with Creepy Christmas. It continues. I'm Coast to Coast AM.